These days, heroines can be easy to spot on the silver screen, from those with superhuman powers like Captain Marvel.
I'm kind of done with you telling me what I can't do.
To more subtle incarnations like Mother Marmy March, advising her daughter Jo in Little Women.
You remind me of myself.
But you're never angry.
I'm angry nearly every day of my life.
You are?
I'm not patient by nature. But with nearly 40 years of effort, I'm learning to not let it get the better of me.
Okay, not gonna lie. I absolutely love that scene. Actress Brie Larson in Captain Marvel first, and then right there, Laura Dern and Saoirse Ronan in Little Women, both from 2019. But for the women of myth, for fairy tales, the path to heroism was not so clear. And that's what we're going to talk about. That and how we got here. How do we recast those ancient stories? What is a mythical woman hero? That's what we're going to talk about, and we're inviting you to join that conversation. Have you tracked that journey? What is a mythical woman hero for you? Have you read the old myths and wanted someone to tell that story or interpret it differently? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Maria Tatar joins us now to have this conversation. She is the author of The Heroine with 1001 Faces, and she is also the chair of the program in folklore and mythology at Harvard University. Maria, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
So I have to tell you, I this was not my planned first question to you, but I'm so curious. What did you think of those two pieces of sound? Does that reflect some place we're getting in our stories about who women are and how they are heroes?
Well, as I listened to Marty, all I could think of was Mildred Hayes. Do you remember Three Billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri?
Frances McDormand.
Yes, absolutely. And how she uses words. She has some weapons too, and she's a woman who understands the power of violence. So she's a little unusual in that way. But the fact that she is an angry woman, she is bent on revenge. But we could also think of her as being bent on social justice, on some kind of justice for her daughter. So we have now emerging, Hollywood is giving us these new models of heroines. And on the one hand, we have the warrior woman who is kind of imitating the heroes of ancient times, seeking glory, seeking immortality through conquest and combat. But there's another model that I think harks back to the heroines of ancient times, women who use words and stories and craft to find a way to secure justice, to bend the arc of the moral universe, as it were, toward justice.
Tell us about one of those women. Give us an example from old mythology or fairy tales.
Oh, well, one of my favorite is, we could start with Philomela and then maybe talk about Scheherazade as well. Philomela is raped by, she's the victim of a sexual assault. She's raped by her brother-in-law, Tereus. And what does she do? She threatens him. She tells him that she's going to broadcast the story of what he has done to her. He responds by cutting out her tongue. And Ovid, in the Metamorphoses, Ovid, who tells us this story, describes in great detail, in excruciating detail, the tongue that is quivering on the ground. So Philomela no longer has words, but what does she do? She weaves the story of her rape into a tapestry and gives it to her sister so that the deed will come to light. Now, we could also think about the Me Too movement in this context, where stories are used to get even, in a sense, but also to change the culture in which we live today. And that's where I think Scheherazade is so important, because she is a courageous woman. She volunteers to marry Shahryar, who is killing off one wife after another the morning after. And what is her strategy? What is her weapon? She uses stories as her sword, in a way. And she tells these cliffhangers, which are so seductive and so exciting, that Shahryar decides to let her live for another night. And this continues for 1,001 nights. And then she not only survives, she saves her own neck, but she also changes the culture in which she lives, because Shahryar then decides to end his cruel, violent ways and take a different turn in his role as ruler.
So I want to say two things here. First, for our listeners, in order to have this conversation, we're going to keep hearing stories like this. It is part of what is remarkable about the myth and the fairy tale. So be aware, we are talking about sexual assault. We are talking about violence. We are talking about the muting of women and repression, and that will continue to be a part of this segment. The other thing that I want to pick up here, Maria Tatar, and then I'll go to our first call. You really struck me. You told those stories, and then at some moment in the book, you talk about the Little Mermaid and her losing her voice in order to essentially come to the surface. And that just slapped me in the face, this tradition of then muting women if they want to get what they – not even get what they – I'm not even going to try to finish the sentence because you can finish it for me.
Silencing, yes, because those stories were so powerful, because they were weapons – we needed strategies to silence women. And so you can go back to the Odyssey and hear Telemachus telling his mother to be quiet and go back to her weaving, or figures like Philomela, whose tongue is cut out, or the Little Mermaid, who trades her voice. And what does she trade her voice for? But the love of a man. You know, she really wants a soul more than anything else. So in some ways, she uses the prince also. But think about how women's talk has also been trivialized. That is, we think, who are the gossips? How are they gendered? We always think of them as women. And we think of gossip as something that is cruel rather than a possible strategy for finding solidarity among like-minded folks. Or we refer to chit-chat or chatter. All of that, all of those ways of not just silencing women, but discrediting what they have to say. The most spectacular example, of course, being Cassandra, who is able to foretell what is going to happen in the Trojan War, but nobody pays any attention to her at all because Apollo, who gave her the gift of prophecy, decided to take it back by telling her that that nothing that she said would be believed. And why does he take it back? Because she decides, she has misgivings about having an affair with him.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, just thud, right? Thud right there, that story. It so underscores your point. 800-423-8255. Courtney's on the line in Cambridge. Courtney, join the conversation.
Hi, thank you so much. I was, I guess it never stuns me how synchronous sometimes the radio can be, especially your show. My friends rewrote the myth of Medusa and showed it in the Museum of Science last year. Projecting it onto the planetarium, Brian King and Nathan Cohen and Dennis Monagle, they all played the music for it. And then Brian King really wrote the script, I guess. I don't want to, you know. But it is about Medusa, who was raped by Poseidon, and portrays the gods discussing, you know, how to put Athena in her place, because Athena had really overstepped her power and her boundaries. So the way they were going to put her into her place was to rape one of her goddesses. And so Poseidon went down and did his thing, and then the rewrite is about how Medusa wasn't a monster, but that Athena sent her to be at peace, because she really did want to be somewhat of like a, not a recluse, but just at peace. She didn't want to be involved in the human drama of victim, villain, rescuer, the social drama triangle. And so she was given the mask of Medusa to protect the land and the magic that
Courtney,
she could see.
That's such a great example. Thank you. And Courtney's example there, Maria, it's this perfect segue into one of the brain benders of the book, which is You know, we think about, we often talk about, well, women don't get written as the heroes. But part of the point that you're making in the book about these stories is it's not that they're not written as the heroes. It's that we don't recognize what they've done as heroic. And that's something a little different. And that is very powerful. And that reframing that Courtney was just giving us about Medusa, I feel like kind of underscores that point.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And if you think about it, in the 1980s, women writers like Anne Sexton, Angela Carter, Margaret Atwood, Toni Morrison took up folklore and fairy tales. And what did they do? They retold the stories from a different perspective. And suddenly they sort of turned them inside out and upside down. Now, in recent years, what has happened is that women writers have taken up Greek myths. They've taken up the story of the Trojan War. They've taken up the epics and told the stories from a different perspective.
Like Circe.
So you have Pat Barker, who writes The Silence of the Girls, who gives us the Trojan War from the perspective of Briseis. And suddenly we see Achilles is actually a butcher. He's a monster. He fails miserably as a hero, but Briseis has this quiet dignity. She cares for other people. She's curious about their welfare, and she manages to become heroic in that narrative. And then in many of the other works, like Natalie Haynes' A Thousand Ships, or we could think of Ursula Le Guin's Lavinia would be another great example.
So I want to now pick up on another thread, and I want to bring in Game of Thrones, if you'll forgive me. And it's because at the beginning you also talked about there is this other version where we are making the women the warriors. And in reading your book, I kept thinking about Game of Thrones. Spoiler alert, folks out there, if you haven't watched the series or read the books. Women are treated abominably. Then they wind up with power and control, and then largely they pay for claiming the warrior's place. And that is recent Yes. popular culture.
Yes, fascinating, isn't it? And you have a whole range of figures in Game of Thrones. Now, you know, the men aren't much better, I would say,
that's
in
fair.
That particular series. So, but that's fascinating because I talked about some of the new models for heroism that are available. And I would say not just for women, but also for men. But then we have the anti-heroine who is emerging in films like Get Out, where Rose becomes a kind of Bluebeard figure from fairy tales who's killing off, or like Shahryar, who's killing off successive fiancés, or Ex Machina, where you have a robot who is, should I put in a spoiler alert?
Yeah, we're spoiling things all over the place, folks, yes. So just
well,
go with
let's
it.
Let's put it this way. We have another anti-hero, a woman who is really to be feared, and something very different from those heroines who exercise curiosity and care in order to survive and to help others survive.
Oh, please stay with curiosity for a minute, because that was another big theme.
Oh, yes. Think of our foundational stories. Eve. Eve is seduced by the serpent. She eats fruit from the tree of knowledge. And yet we always see her as somebody who is interested in carnal knowledge. She seduces Adam, and she brings evil and sin into the world, much like Pandora, who lifts the lid of the jar given to her, and then releases plague, famine, want, labor, all of these terrible things into the world, leaving us with nothing but hope. So curiosity, this a virtue in my book, and something that we want to promote in children today as we raise children, want to promote it in ourselves, is something that is demonized, is seen as a negative trait when women possess it or exercise it. And etymologically, curiosity is actually related to care. Early usages of the term, if you go back to the 16th, 17th century, you discover that curiosity means being attentive, caring for something. And that's so, it's such a no-brainer in a way. It's totally logical, because when you are curious, you begin to care about something. And I think that the beauty of the story of heroines is that they use that. And in the 20th century, 21st century, they become detectives, they become writers. They're trying to navigate their way to a better world.
Harriet the Spy, Nancy Drew, both examples.
Yes, absolutely.
So I want to turn now to helping people think about what to do with what you're framing up. So I have an older sister who's coming this weekend. She's part of a book club where they don't read books. They read either articles or chapters. And I would love to give them the first chapter of this book. What is the discussion question for a group of women who want to dive into this together? What, if you were in that room, what would you tell them to talk about, or questions would you tell them to ask?
Oh, I think the first question would be, what is a hero and what is a heroine? That is, how have you thought about that over time? And how have we framed heroism way back when up to the present? And you start to realize that the concept of heroism isn't stable at all, that it changes over time, it evolves. Who were our heroes during the past 2 years? Healthcare workers, the people who were taking care of us, and then the scientists who were curious and trying to find a cure for us. And that constellation of traits, I think, is just so powerful. And it reminds us that the model we have today is very different from what we had even a few centuries ago, but certainly completely different from what you find in ancient times.
So I won't have time to go to Susan in Arlington, but she wanted to point out Maleficent, the most recent versions of that, which take her from a bad guy, her backstory, to someone who is trying to defend the nature and the people around her. So we have about 60 seconds, two or three stories, maybe one from a fairy tale, one from mythology, one from a movie that people should check out, just sort of rapid fire.
Oh, start with Bluebeard, my favorite tale, which is about a husband who is a serial murderer, and his wife is a curious woman who wants to find out what is in his forbidden chamber. So she opens up the door, and if you read it, you'll find out what's in that chamber. And then I suppose for an update of that, let me invoke again Get Out, because it's a rewrite of that fairy tale. And then I think what I would recommend is Pat Barker's The Women of Troy.
Fantastic.
I have just started, and it's breathtaking.
Maria Tatar, chair of the program in folklore and mythology at Harvard University and author of the new book, The Heroine with 1001 Faces. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to talk to you.